Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Sakariasin. Joining me this week are Madeline Osberger, reporter for the Aspen Daily News, Aspen Times columnist Roger Marolt and Andy Stone, and Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent. The votes are in and have been counted. The controversial Base 2 hotel proposal in downtown Aspen went down in flames. And that's despite the developer throwing tens of thousands of dollars into the campaign.
At some point, unfortunately, I think that money does matter.
The majority of property owners in Pitkin, Eagle, and Garfield counties agreed to increase or extend their taxes in order to fund fire districts and schools. Elected officials in Garfield County pulled the local government's funding for Planned Parenthood in Glenwood Springs.
And it really created a firestorm.
The move led to a public crowdfunding effort that has raised more than $10,000 for the organization. Meanwhile, in Marble, a key piece of property for Aspen students is up for sale.
It's one of those rites of passage for Aspen kids, and it's very valuable.
And sheriff's deputies in Pitkin County are some of the lowest paid in the state. A recalled town councilman has agreed to pay $15,000 for damage he did inside the Pitkin County jail this past summer. We're just coming off the election. Obviously, there's some analysis to be done here. Anybody surprised with any of the results?
Yes. I thought Base 2 would be much closer.
Why?
Just based upon feeling of the younger generation who were so engaged in this election. That I thought it would be, and the passion that was put forward, clearly, I was wrong.
I think, too, it comes down to the spending that the Base 2 proponents did. When they put on a really professional presentation like that in the media, I think we start to see that as votes rather than just what it is, an attempt to get votes. So I thought it would be closer, too, just because I think they did a really professional, polished job of promoting it.
And I think, in fact, it turns out there wasn't any groundswell, which I think that's what we're saying here. You felt like there was a groundswell. You felt like Base 2 was doing well, but in fact, it wasn't. There was a lot of noise, but not a lot of actual votes behind it.
And maybe that you should have even joined the groundswell or be left behind. I think that was by design. They pitted the old guard against the newcomers, and really tried to get that going.
Well, I saw a lot of boots on the ground action too. Mark Hunt coming to my Burlingame neighborhood. I did not attend, but he hosted a barbecue. And people in the community who had previously been very cynical, like, well, maybe I'll give a thought to this. Well, clearly it didn't, there wasn't enough maneuvering there, but I thought it was interesting that he was able to come and make it more personal.
Yeah.
By all accounts, Mark Hunt is a very nice, very engaging person. People who meet him always seem to like him. That is why I have made a particular point of never meeting him. I am easily led astray by nice people. Somebody smiles at me and I go, oh.
Nor have I. I have not met him. He was in our office a week ago when Brent Gardner-Smith was in there prior to releasing his article, which I thought was very well done, a lot of research there. And I did not come over and meet Mark either.
The scary thing about that, I think it's just a little bit of a preview of what we've asked for as far as future campaigns. When these developers come in with $10, $15, $20 million on the line, they now know that $50,000 probably isn't enough. So we're going to find out how much is enough, and we're going to see what that translates into as far as invasion into our lives with the bombardment of political ads and promotions and things like that.
Yeah, that's what we're looking at coming up in the future. Post-referendum one, and as has been discussed, Base 2 didn't go up for a vote because of referendum one. It had its own separate process that led us to that point. But from now on, all these would-be major projects are going to have a vote, and we're going to see these massive campaigns. And I think you're right, Roger. I think there's going to be a lot more money thrown at it, and sooner or later we will find out what Aspen's price point is.
As we always do, right?
Yeah.
But does money really matter? Because look at what it won by so much, 67% versus 33%, and the opposition had only raised, I think it was under 10K.
It probably depends on the project, I think, but at some point, unfortunately, I think that money does matter. If I get invited to enough beer and pizza parties, I can be swayed.
Mine better be red wine and lamb chops.
There's your price point. It's a little higher.
Well, I think that could be said also for the Armory building, $15,000 from Bruce Etkin.
Yeah.
And there really wasn't much opposition to that. I don't think that issue was discussed thoroughly enough, quite honestly. I know it was just an advisory vote, but I think that we want to look at what city council, what they have. And okay, is this a carte blanche now for 20,000 square feet more over in that parcel? I think that we have a lot of looking at that in the public projects just as well as the private.
Some people have said that that was premature to put on the ballot because there isn't a specific plan yet to, you know, about how much money it's going to require to raise, what the operational costs are going to be, what the actual programming is in that building. But I guess just the concept alone, people half the people.
Yeah, so it basically says nothing, which mm-hmm. begs the question of what is the value of an advisory question anyway?
Right. And we were just talking about hydro and how the hydro vote split this community just like Base 2 did, and that was an advisory vote.
Yeah.
And people kept going back to that. It was just an advisory vote, mm-hmm. so you can't put a lot of weight into it.
Yeah.
But I think that was the last divisive vote, but I don't think it was anything like this. Base 2, I think we're going to have ramifications. There's a lot of very sore feelings. Wendell wrote a column in today's Daily News. I think the proponents, they put so much, they attached everything like this was going to be the magic bullet, and now all of our ills are solved. And I think it is interesting that generation really has taken this so personally. I know my father, years ago when I was a young reporter at the Aspen Times, I had taken when they were removing that gas station over by where Paradise Bakery is now, and I just wrote about that and wrote it, and I was just so invested in that. And then really nobody else was. And my dad at the time, he said, you know, be careful to put more into this than the people who are actually affected by it. And I think you see that with maybe some of the proponents, this younger group that really backed Mark Hunt's project, where Mark, the day after the election, he's like, I didn't think it was going to pass anyway. But, you know, and they're, you know, crying in their beer, and he's walked on. He's on to his other $100 million worth of projects in Aspen.
Right. He doesn't, he could care less one way or the other. He said it would have been fun, but I'll just go do my original plan.
Right.
Another thing I think that's interesting about the Base 2 election is, you know, with referendum 1 in the springtime, it seemed to me that the will of the voters was pretty clearly stated that they were against the project. And then we had the Base 2 election, and we saw, I believe, every council person come out with a letter for it, besides mm-hmm. Bert. And then it gets trounced again. And so I'm just wondering, I mean, are our elected officials paying attention to the constituents in this town? I mean, it seems like they just keep going back. I don't know if they're being stupid or defiant or arrogant, or I just don't get that. And I wonder how that will play out in their reelection bids.
And I think it's an interesting combination of all the stupid, arrogant, defiant, or to put a better spin on it, they think they were right. They think that this was a good thing to do, and they're sticking with it. That's their story, and they're sticking with it.
Isn't that an irritating thing, though, to think that your politicians act like they know better than the voters? Because they have sort of hinted that the voters have no idea what they're talking about, that we don't know what's best for us, and they take it upon themselves to tell us. That grates on me.
There's a real danger in that, and it's called recall when you do that. And I think up in Snowmass, perhaps we saw some elected officials last year who wanted to take things into their own hand, and now there's a lawsuit against the town because of it.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I think that the city council up here, I mean, they're trying to do what they think is right. That I think they truly believe that having new product so you can draw more people and think about the future. I really believe that they voted based on that value.
Oh, you know? I believe that too. I just wonder how that's so out of sync with what the rest of the community thinks, or at least a vast majority of the community believes.
Right. And just for our listeners, I should at least explain referendum 1, which is that they changed the Home Rule Charter in the spring election. The voters weighed in and said, we are going to vote on every building that got a variance from city council.
You know, I think that there is a concern for me. Yes, he kept it, Mark Hunt kept the employee housing. He was on the up and up with that, but by how many feet? Okay, I'm going to build my rooms are going to be 290 feet because 300 feet triggers the employee housing mitigation. I have a problem with that. I mean, I understand it's within code, and that's what he was told to do. But that was one of the reasons that I personally did not favor it either. And I actually wrote an editorial to the contrary that did not get offered. It did not run in the Aspen Daily News. I was in the minority with that. But this is representative at the paper.
But you did write an editorial in Thursday's paper.
I wrote one in Thursday's paper, just talking about how we need to heal after this. that the greater good is for us as locals to be a community, and because we're going to have a lot larger issues facing us. And if we're splintered like we were, say, after Hydro, even though that affected so much of a smaller group, but there was still that bad juju in town because of it. And I'm still feeling there's a lot of angst and anger. And just when I was walking over here, I talked to two people about this, and they both had very different takes on it.
Well, I think you're right on that, and I don't think Base 2 was primarily about the building. I think it was about the process.
It was just a metaphor for larger issues. That's mm-hmm. what I see. 37-room hotel, but you look at the... And you know, something else that I think the city of Aspen could take a lesson from Snowmass Village, that there's never been a traffic study done that corner. Look at Base 1, where that's going to be, right across from City Market. I think we need a traffic study at that corner because you have large trucks coming out. You have in the summer, it's the main route.
And I think that's one of the things that happens with these projects is, so you're saying, the real issues get submerged into the various political issues that are coming up. I mean, for example, with Base 2, and if we talk about mending fences, about patching up the community, the fact was that in the campaign for Base 2, they found, you know, a new fracture line to split old against young. I mean, that was a strange one to decide there, to say, oh, no, it's going to be, they tried to find a little group they could split off to get the support of and turn this into a generational thing. It didn't need to happen. That didn't need to be part of the election. But it seemed like a good strategy for Mark Hunt and his forces to try to create a group that they could split off and get the support of. So every time we get one of these campaigns, people are going to be looking for, this is typical politics, looking for a new line on which to fracture a community and get some votes.
And just to point out, the Hunt group, out of the other side of their mouth, was telling us these anonymous investors they had were so benevolent and loving of this community, and they drove a spike right through the center of it.
They certainly did, especially if this was just a trial balloon that was being floated to the electorate. Boy, there was a lot of damage that was done because of that.
I think the council will have to be considering this kind of, you know, discussion and what happened and leading up to the vote when they are approving projects and granting variances. And realizing what's going to happen if we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the Daily News had a great story in Thursday's paper that kind of gave a historic look at other public votes when it came to building, and all of them got shot down, with the exception of the Ritz and maybe another one that was early 90s. But anything past that, you know, that the visitor center, the arts building where the community bank building is, all shot down, right?
Yes.
So we tend to not approve any new building.
Well, right. We tend not to approve new buildings until the town hits a rough patch. Because when things aren't rough, there's so much new building going on all around that it seems as if everybody is swamped in construction trucks and the noise is endless. When suddenly the town hits a rough patch, as happened back when the Ritz was approved, then suddenly everyone's looking around going, uh-oh, we might be in trouble, let's build. And so things get approved, and then we go on like that. So I think it also, those votes depend on the cycles in the economy.
Well, and there's also the obvious way to get around the whole new process, and that's to build a building according to code.
You are listening to Valley Roundup, a look at the week's news with writers and editors in the Valley. Joining me this week are Aspen Daily News reporter Madeline Osberger, columnist for the Aspen Times Roger Merolt and Andy Stone, and Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent. Well, there was a lot of other questions, too, and mostly tax-based. And Randy, down in Glenwood Springs, were you surprised by Carbondale, Basalt, fire districts passing, and the Roaring Fork School District $122 million bond passing by as much as it did?
I think the Roaring Fork School District did a good job of running an urgent campaign from start to finish. They did everything that they could to answer every question that they could. They would have a public forum and people would ask questions, and then they would have somebody with the school board or with the district write a guest opinion or a letter that specifically answered those questions.
It didn't win by that big of a margin, though, right? It was like
57% is pretty good.
Yeah.
And it won in every community. You know, the support was pretty consistent. I think the Eagle County portion of the district, which is Elgebel and a little bit of Basalt was the strongest support. In Glenwood Springs, where there are probably more retired folks concerned about property taxes on fixed income, the support was a little less, but it was still 55 or 56% here.
Right.
And that's a pretty good win. The Carbondale Fire District.
That won by 63%, and
yeah.
I'm curious about that since they got shot down the last time they asked for money.
And they asked for less money this time, and they put a two-year sunset on it, which they had succeeded, I think, in 2011. They got a two-year levy increase. So the narrative there is that they will spend the next 2 years looking at the master plan that was done and try to find a sustainable way to run the department. That'll be interesting to see if they really are interested in changing the status quo.
Well, the person who's in charge of that campaign, if there's any indication of that, he didn't know when the election was. He didn't know that he needed to file campaign finance reports.
That was bizarre. It was hard to understand. Did he really not know when the election was?
Yeah.
I heard that story and said, that can't be right.
That's exactly what he told our reporter, Elise Thatcher. And he didn't think, he had no idea he had to file campaign finance reports.
I can believe, but the fact that he didn't know when election day was in his campaign, that's just weird.
So then on the other hand, that's not something you would lie about.
Right?
They did file a campaign finance report, but I think that the fire district, and we said this editorially, is wedded to a status quo, and I'm not sure that the economy is. Does everybody feel like the economy is like stable and headed upward? I think that we can see swings in property values, which could affect the fire districts again.
Well, the bottom could fall out at any time.
And I think that this fire department needs to figure out a way to operate without depending on ever-rising property values.
Is there anything else you want to talk about as far as the elections go?
The only thing that surprised me was the margin of victory for Jennifer Rupert. Carl Hanlon, who's a really good guy, and he's the acting Glenwood Springs city attorney, and he spent a lot of time working as a school board member to try to get the bond passed, didn't campaign that much. And I guess it hurt. Jennifer Rupert has a lot of friends. It's very well known and got a lot of people to write letters to the editor and really used that personal network. I don't know that there's a great deal of difference between the two candidates, but she was elected with overwhelming numbers.
I should just say for disclosure purposes that Carl Hanlon is a member of the board of directors here at Aspen Public Radio. Randy, since we're on politics in Glenwood Springs, there's some dust up with Planned Parenthood and the GARCO commissioners. Can you give us a brief synopsis of what's going on down there?
Well, this took us by surprise. The county commission was reviewing human services grants, which they do every year with the budget. And Tom Jankowski spoke up and said he had gotten emails from Planned Parenthood's political action group, which is incorporated separately from the nonprofit itself so that it can do advocacy, and that the human services grants aren't supposed to be political, and he just wasn't comfortable with the $1,500 grant to Planned Parenthood that was designated for cervical cancer screening. So he persuaded the other commissioners to pull that grant, and it really created a firestorm among folks here in our readership. One woman started a GoFundMe campaign that had raised more than $12,000, and there's been really quite a firestorm of public comment.
I would be curious what the vote was among the commissioners. Was it unanimous? Was it 3-2? It was unanimous.
He obviously provided a good argument, or at least a convincing one.
And, you know, these are generally, if there is a 2-1 vote, it's usually Jankowski is the one. So if he can get one of the other two to go along, it's probably going to be all of them. But I don't know. It probably won't have political repercussions. I think that it just seems like a very small amount of money and a symbolic to kick up such a firestorm over.
Right. Moving up Valley from Glenwood, all of the news outlets had a story about a property in Marble that's been used for decades for the Aspen School District and their outdoor education program. And the landowner has it up for sale and it could go to the highest bidder. And now Aspen Valley Land Trust and the district and parents, I think, are trying to raise money to buy this piece of land. Madeline, did your...
My daughter did go on the Outdoor Ed. They do a week of hiking, and then they do a... our daughters are the same age, Rogers
yeah,
and mine.
Yeah,
and then they do a solo, too, and it's just, it's one of those rites of passage for Aspen kids, and it's very valuable. I think it's fantastic that there's this effort, movement to buy this property. I don't see a downside.
My parents' kids went there. You know, that was 40 years ago, and that is one of the few things I remember from, clearly remember from my school experience here, and it's valuable, and it's not just about teaching kids how to camp. It's just teaching them about themselves and the environment they live in and the much greater world beyond what we see in our daily city life. And it just makes better people, I think, out of our kids. Starts them at a young age. And I hope they can raise the money. I've heard that they're down to needing just $100,000 to pull the deal off, but the money has to be raised by the end of the year to make the deal happen. So hopefully they can do it.
Do you know how much money they're trying to raise?
I think it was originally $450,000.
So it's not that expensive of a property.
No, and it's not.
Relatively speaking,
it's out in Marble. It's the Outward Bound camp. It's a long way from any urban area. So I guess you could build a cabin or a house on it. It's not an Aspen type piece of real estate.
It's nice to see a community effort in favor of something that is an unmitigated positive.
Yeah.
Unmitigated good, yeah. As you were just saying. There's nothing bad about that program, and it's nice to see people coming together to try to preserve it.
Yeah, and it's a unique property. It would be hard to replace, I think. They've got the rock walls they can climb and the woods that they camp in and the streams that they do the jog and dip in. And it was set up for Outward Bound, so they have the ropes course. And you have to hike to it. That's the big part of the thing. You hike 20 miles or more over a couple days to get there. So it's just really set up, and the program's designed actually around that property. So it's unique to the program. If it's not unique to anybody else, and so hopefully we can step up and as a community and buy that.
Randy, does the Roaring Fork School District RE1 have any sort of outdoor ed program like that, or have a piece of land that they use like the school district does here in Aspen?
They don't have a piece of land, but they're working on certain school being expeditionary learning. I think Crystal River Elementary in Carbondale aspires to that, and then certainly Glenwood Springs Elementary, which is right on the river, a big part of its renovation is to take advantage of that location and get kids outside.
Right.
Well, it'll be a great gesture if the Aspen School District does succeed in buying this to allow the other districts to use this.
That's what I would
think. Oh, wouldn't that be fantastic?
I mean, it's right in there, almost in their back door, for Basalt, Carbondale, and Glenwood.
It doesn't seem like a reason. It's not like they're going to...
Maybe they can go down there and get some money from them.
Well, you could lease it out for a little bit anyway, and every little bit helps the local school. So,
moving on to another topic, I did a story earlier this week about Pitkin County Sheriff's deputies getting a very slight raise in their wage, in their hourly rate, because some deputies had been coming into the sheriff's office saying, you know, we've been talking to our peers in Basalt and Aspen and Glenwood Springs and Garfield County, and even in Summit and some other places where Joe DeSalvo compared hourly wage, the deputies here were being paid woefully lower than those agencies. And he got a $90,000 supplemental budget item for 2016. But he says, you know, it's really hard to attract and retain good cops when your starting salary is at $21 an hour. I know that APD is the starting hourly wage, I think, is $30 an hour. And they're doing pretty much the same job.
Well, how did we get to this point? How did they fall so far behind?
That's a good question.
Well, as we talked about, though, and I don't mean this to be anti-sheriff's deputy or anything else, I'm very sympathetic, but it's kind of a cruel reality of where we live. I think lots of people move to this area and take a pay cut just to be here and accept the non-monetary compensation we all receive on a abundantly on a daily basis. So there are a lot of people here who will work for less money, and I think that's the sheriff's deputies are unfortunately a victim of that. Although, economics.
Well, that's perfectly reasonable. We've all been through that. But at the same time, if there are inequalities within the same, God, I hate these terms. There are inequalities within the same industry, within the demographic area, which is to say, if the police department's making a whole lot more than the sheriff's department, then it doesn't quite hold true that this is a reasonable situation, that you should, the sheriff's deputies should suck it up because they live in a nice place. If the cops can make that much, the deputies can make that much, and they're all making less than they would if they were getting shot at in the streets of New York City, bless them for that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe when Chris Jacobson pays the restitution for his jail cell, that they can spin off a little of that money to
right.
some of the
yeah.
deputies.
Lightning round, just real quick on the an update on the Jacobson saga. This recalled Snowmass Village town councilman who was arrested for a DUI in June, then tore up the jail, causing $15,000 in damage. He said in court last week that he would pay the damages.
That's what was reported. That he needs to get a settlement from his divorce, and then in December he's going to pay.
And then his DUI case and his felony case are still pending.
It could be quite ironic if he takes a plea and then it's a misdemeanor, and this whole recall was for naught, perhaps. I know there were other issues at play, but
like showing up or not showing up.
Well, that's yeah, that well, was yeah, that yeah was... where he didn't come for five or six meetings in a row. I think I'm not defending him, but I think he felt it was futile at that point.
I originally defended him. I thought the recall was a waste of time and in mm-hmm. a unnecessary divisive exercise we were going through. But then he stopped. Yeah. Going to meetings, and he became a little defiant, and then I thought, wow, he's not exactly showing me much with that. So,
yeah. I think if he had shown up, the community may have supported him a little bit more.
I agree.
There was a groundswell, and there were people who felt the whole thing was premature and unfair.
Yeah, I agree. If he'd just showed a mm-hmm. little bit of contriteness. And
well, this is one of these things. The personal gets political. The political gets personal.
He was a good opposition voice on the council.
He was.
And I think he did provide that. Now, Tom Good, I could see perhaps not being as radical, but I think that he's going to be a good councilman.
Yeah, I think the outcome it was good. Tom is a very good replacement.
We have some fine histories about local officials with DUIs. For those who remember the days of Steve Wishart on the Aspen City Council, Wishart was a longtime Aspen character, a curious and fascinating person who got elected to city council. And I think while he was an active member of the council, got so drunk he was wound up passing out behind the wheel and taking out a half a dozen parked cars on Main Street. And served out his city council term, and then for his last meeting of city council, he was a rather person of short stature, and so he showed up swigging a Courvoisier Napoleon brandy and ranting and raving for his last city council meeting. So, characters.
The Aspen community was much more forgiving then than now.
And it was a good thing.
Well, on that note, thank you very much for taking the time.
Always great to be here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Valley Roundup. Thanks to Aspen Times columnist Andy Stone and Roger Merolt, Aspen Daily News reporter Madeline Osberger, and Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.